They was writing my obituary.
Oh, wow.
They thought I died.
Wow.
Yes. This guy wrote, he was like, I'm here. I rode out to Lompoc Penitentiary with gun tires, meat razor wire, and I'm going to see Freeway Ricky Ross. And this is the last time I'll be writing about him. He's gone. He's through. The world is tired of his dreaming. They don't want him to dream no more.
Listen free to Hot Boxing, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. If you love the show, share it with a friend, and don't forget to leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hot Boxing. I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
Mike, we got a great one.
Oh, we have a sensational
legendary guest here. Yes. We got Freeway Rick Ross. Welcome, my brother.
How you doing, Rick?
Thank you, man.
I'm good, man.
Great to have you here, man.
Great to be here. You know, I don't know, man. It's crazy. Me and Mike came up at the same time. Like, our runs was almost parallel.
I knew people that knew Rick and stuff. I knew girls that knew him and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we went to New York and watched him fight, like, maybe his 12th fight or something like that.
Wow, really? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. Madison Square Garden.
That's when you know you ball. You kids go watch an up-and-coming rookie. Check him out. That's crazy.
Well, you know, my partner knew, man. My partner was like, man, this dude's going to be the next champ, man. Come on, let's go. Let's go check him out.
You know? Now that's balling. You get, he's the next champ. Let's just go check him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's somebody that's in the sport that knows sports. Other people don't know nothing about. So let's go check this out.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. You've walked a pretty unique and incredible path.
No doubt. It's been a journey.
Sort of mind-boggling.
Listen, but no.
Very mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean,
do you ever see people that you were hassling with in the streets now? They have normal jobs. They're like, you know what I mean?
I see a few. A few of them made it.
Oh, God.
I mean, went to jail, you know, did they 10, 15, 20 years, and you know, and it was like, I can't do it again. You know, I can't go that route. So they squared up and got a job, which is a wise thing to do. You know, if you can't be an entrepreneur, then... You know, get a job. I mean, but a job is, you know, I just couldn't work a job. I got to be an entrepreneur. I got to be where I can go whenever I get ready. When I get ready. You know, I got to be free.
I feel that, man. I feel that. What, I mean, for people who don't know your story, where do you start?
Under a rock and find out where they at. We go under the rock. We dig the rock up and be like, hey, you come out of there. It's time to come to the light. It's time to come to the light. No, you know, I started selling drugs as a 19-year-old kid who all of his dreams had suddenly been taken away from him. My dream was to be a tennis player, you know, was pretty good, you know. Probably could have got a scholarship. Yeah,
did you meet at the Arthur Ashe?
I met Ashe.
Never met Arthur Ashe. I have a tattoo of Arthur Ashe. I never met
him. He came down to our high school. We had the best black high
school. I have a tattoo of Arthur Ashe, man. I never met Arthur Ashe.
Yeah. We had the best high school tennis team in the country.
Really?
Yeah, we did. And, amazing. Ashe came down and gave us awards. And, well, not me, because I was on JV at that time. I wasn't on the varsity team. Gave awards and hit with the top three or four players, and it was an amazing day, man. And I was like, oh, I know I'm in the right sport.
Yeah.
So I just took to it, man. I fell in love with it. I didn't have anything else, you know. At that time, I couldn't read, I couldn't write. Basketball and football wasn't going to be the way because I was too little, you know, and. Tennis was perfect for me, so I jumped in and I started putting my all into it. And too bad at the end of the rainbow, when it was time for me to graduate from high school, they found out I couldn't read or write, and they was like, "Oh, well, you're not going to college, and you're a dummy." And I was kind of crushed by it. Found myself back in South Central Los Angeles, in what in tennis we call no man's land. You know, where you're in a position on the court where you really can't do anything, and you don't know what you're going to do. You know, you're just trying to survive. And that's the position I was in. To go to prison and to get a life sentence without the possibility of parole, you know, it's like right now.
Did you freak out right away? Or did you say, hold it, just calm down? I know this is not the end.
I knew, Mike, when I was going to do the crime, that I was looking at a life sentence. So when I was going through the process, it was kind of shocking, but not totally, because, you know, it's like, you deserve this. You know, you earned this. So it was kind of shocking. The hardest part was the day that they actually gave it to me, and my mom was in court, and she broke down. You know my mom, too, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she had dinner with you and everything. She was like, oh, Mike Tyson is so nice. You told her she could drive your car. That was the highlight. Yeah, that was one of the highlights of her lifetime.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mike told me I could drive her car. He said, Miss Frost, you can drive my car if you want to. And you didn't even know it was my mom. He didn't even know it was my mom, right? That's just how he was carrying it. So that was, you know, one of the highlights of her life is that, man, she came to jail and told me.
Yeah,
she came to jail and told me, like, man, I was with Mike Tyson in Cleveland. You was in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was with Turo, a boxer, an old boxer named Turo from Cleveland. Y'all was at a restaurant, and you was like, oh, yeah, you can drive that car.
Probably at Lancer's or somewhere. That was the hangout, Lancer's.
So, you know, it's crazy how our paths crossed in so many different ways, and you know, now that we sitting here and we talking, and your kid playing tennis, my kids play tennis. You got the form. I'm trying to get a dispensary. I mean, it's just so many things in common, and sports kind of get that to you too. You know, where you have that. I got to win. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to lose. Yeah. I want to be a winner.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude that I have right now.
That comes from our upbringing. You know, we watched our parents be losers and watched people in our neighborhood be losers, watched everybody just lose everything. We don't want to be that way.
No.
You watch the block talk about them and people talk about you and your name is in the mud and shit.
And I think that's mentality is why so many young black men sell drugs right now, because they don't have no other outlet. But they don't want to be a loser. You know, like, I ain't taking welfare. I don't want food stamps. And, you know, I can't stand in line for the government cheese. I'd rather sell drugs than go
to prison.
Now,
listen, when I was in the streets, right, late 90s, 70s and stuff, I guess, couldn't sell fucking drugs on the corner. I just couldn't sell a drug or be in the house and wait. I had to take it. You know what I mean? I would take the drugs. I just couldn't be on the street selling it to people. So.
You didn't have the patience.
No way. How could you do it? You're amazing, brother. How could you do it?
Shit, I had to stay there all night. I'd be like,
wow, fuck.
My thing was kind of like the way you work out, though. Mike, you could do 1,000 squats. I read in the paper one time they were saying Mike Tyson do 1,000 squats every day.
1,000, bro?
Yes, brother. I was an animal. That's why my whole body is fucked up. I was an animal.
So that's how I was about selling drugs.
I can't even run now. I can't even run, do road work now. My body all fucked up.
Hey, man, you know, you put it through the ringer.
I was taught that the harder you train, the more you would achieve.
Yeah.
The harder you train, the more you break down.
I was the same, man.
That's what had me break down.
Yeah. My whole body broke down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people...
Well, Rick... I watched your documentary last night, Freeway.
Did you?
Yeah, man. Because I wanted to just brush up.
You hear all the politicians talking about them and stuff?
It's just mind-blowing, man. And I want to ask you a question and I know that you do a lot of speaking. You get out there, you know. You use the platform that you have to really spread some positive good in the world.
We have to. I mean, when we all look at it, when we're gone... The one thing that anybody want people to say about him is that he was a good person.
Yeah.
You know, like the deed that Mike did with my mom, he don't even remember.
Yeah.
But she remembered.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the things that's going to count, you know, when you're no longer around, when you can't speak for yourself, when other people speak for you, you want people to say nice things about you. You know, like you go, and that's one of the reasons I stopped going to funerals, because they go to the funeral and they sitting up there and they lying about this guy. You know, the guy was a piece of shit, man. The guy ain't helped nobody. He took from everybody he come in contact with, and I don't want to be that person. You know, I don't want to be the person that people got to come in and make my family feel good and tell a bunch of lies about me. You know, I want it to be where I actually helped people, you know, where I actually did good by other people. And I'm hoping that one day I can do more good than I did bad with when I sold cocaine, you know, because I sold a lot of cocaine and I sold it to a lot of people. And I did that out of ignorance. You know, because I didn't really understand. I didn't understand what cocaine was. I was 19 years old, had never saw cocaine, had never read a book, had never hit a joint, had never drunk a beer. You know, I was one of like Mike was dedicated. Yeah, I was dedicated to tennis.
Stone
I was like
cold sober.
You know, I'm running 5 miles every other day doing wind sprints, and I'm like, I'm gonna be great. You know what I'm saying? And I was taught to stay away from that. Mm-hmm. So when I went into that lane, when I found myself selling drugs, I didn't know what I was doing. Nothing. You know, I'm just listening to other people telling me what I should be doing and how I should be doing it. And
yeah. Well, how do you feel having that perspective now? You know, I mean, just how do you feel about, you know, being the spark of the crack epidemic in America, you know, and seeing just the wreckage that it causes in the individuals?
Well, I have no regrets.
Yeah.
You know, no regrets, only lessons.
Yeah.
You know, I learned some valuable lessons from it, lessons that I wouldn't repeat, but lessons that I hope other people can look at and make the right decision from. You know, so often we don't have anybody that we can go to. You know, when I started selling drugs, I didn't know nobody that had ever sold cocaine. Now I knew about the Nicky Barnes and the guys that sold heroin, and I wasn't going to sell heroin because I understood what heroin was. But when it came to cocaine, I didn't understand.
Cocaine was a social drug.
Yeah, I mean, it was a drug that
if you didn't do cocaine, you were like square.
It was like the affluent.
Yeah, trust me, if you didn't do cocaine, you were square.
Exactly, and that's how I looked at
it. Nobody wanted to fuck with you or hang with you. If you didn't do coke, you were fucked up.
That's crazy. Crazy, man.
That is right there.
Just to be in a circle, you did it. You know
I mean, everybody was doing it. Rick James.
No, absolutely.
Richard Pryor. And
if you're around somebody, you don't do cocaine, motherfucker. Man, you stupid mother. You going to do this shit, bitch ass nigga?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Fuck you. You a cop or something, motherfucker?
Right, right.
That's what they say.
Yeah. No, man. I mean, it's, absolutely. You know.
So when I looked at it, that's how I looked at it.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
This is a sociable thing.
Sense.
This is what we doing. It's our generation. And,
hey, let's keep it real. It still is.
Yeah.
It's a big epidemic. Cocaine, you know, it went underground, but it's really a big epidemic right now.
Well, then what was so interesting to me is the real horror what was happening above you.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
now that's a whole nother world.
The Contra shit,
CIA,
Iran-Contra, CIA. I mean, that shit.
Yo, but listen, when you think about it, right? In this perspective, right? A black man, right? That's some big shit, man. When you think about some guy, you know, you think he's literally can't read and write, came from the ghetto.
Yes.
And he's just, you know what I mean?
It was fascinating.
He has the president talking about, the president knows his name.
And it made a lot of sense.
Politicians in the community knows his name.
Yeah. George Senior is saying the movie community knows his name.
Everybody knows his name.
I mean, and
could be a real ego trip too, though.
It can. I mean, that's more addictive
than the money and everything. Huh?
Than everything, just to have that type of power and have the.
Did you have other dealers from all over the country coming trying to meet you?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine that?
Absolutely.
All these guys coming to try to meet you?
Well, Rick, it's so, to me, it appears to be so cosmic, your life. You know, this, because of who you are now, like Mike, you had to live this super extreme life and have these experiences so that you could come out of it and now spread good and change the way people see the world.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because how many thousands of guys could have been the guy that got connected to Danilo?
No, listen.
Right.
I had to be a special person.
Only one.
No, no.
There was only one guy.
Nobody's the only guy to be special, yeah. If it wasn't him, it wouldn't have been nobody.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's that dedication that it takes, you know, like, who's going to do 1,000 squats
every
day?
Right, it's
you know, what kind of mindset does that take to do that? And the same thing with me. It takes that same type of mindset. Like, who's going to stand out on this block? Who's going to take all this money and don't go buy a car, but put it back into the drugs to make the connection, get hooked on the money?
Yeah.
That was always my goal, is to hook the connection to where he's not going to want to sell anybody else drugs, because he knows that he can come to me and get all his money. His money going to be on time. He's going to be safe. Nothing's going to happen to him while he's on my watch. And that's kind of the way I practice my trade.
So, and that's so hard in the drug business, because everybody's so grimy.
Right now.
Yeah, so creepy.
Now it's like rob the plug.
Yeah. It's all about creepy motherfuckers.
Rob the plug.
Jealous,
and then,
creepy people. And then really bad stuff, man.
And then if he don't like it, shoot him. So it's definitely a different time, a different breed of people that's getting involved right now.
When you found out about all the shit going on, the Iran-Contra deal,
I didn't believe it.
You didn't believe it?
Fuck no! What the hell? Rick Ross in involved with the CIA? Stop it! Who said that? Get rid of that guy. I mean, I was baffled, you know, like, not me, little Rick from South Central LA, who had holes in his shoes when he was going to school, and all the kids used to laugh at me because I had a pair of red shoes, and my mom made me wear the shoes to school anyway, told my boy, you gonna wear them shoes, I don't know what you talking about.
What's the most money you seen? Boom, it's right there, Paul.
One time I had like $3.2 million cash sitting on the floor, you know.
I'm sure you wouldn't. You know how heavy that is? That's around 40 pounds.
It takes a couple people to carry that, Mike.
Yeah, hard to
you gotta
carry
get a couple people.
Mike, how much have you seen?
Huh?
What's the most you've ever seen?
Shit, nigga, I must listen, right? All right, listen. Oh, man, I can't even tell you. Listen, one day, we went to the bank, right? The bank that me and my wife at the time, Robin Givens, had, right? And we was going to the bank to see where my money was, because this bitch was fucking with some money. Some shit was going on wrong with the money. So we went to the bank, right? And I didn't know where none of the accounts or nothing. I knew nothing about money. I was almost like yours. I didn't know nothing about money and anything. I was a dumb motherfucker. I just knew how to fight, and I made a lot of money. So when we got there, and we really didn't have the rights because it was under her name, they didn't like her so much. They said, listen, the accounts are right here. We got them right here. The secret account. And we got our money. It must have been around $9 million and stuff.
Cash?
We put it in a big bag. We couldn't carry it. It was too much. So we had to leave some, and we took around $1 million with us. And we put them in different accounts. Stuff like that. Something like
God,
that. God,
bro.
It was
that's
too heavy
crazy,
for us.
Dude.
Yeah, that money is heavy. I had guys to carry my money for me, though. I was like, I ain't carrying that shit. You carry it. Get that bag. You get that in. He get the other in.
No, listen. It's backbreaking work, though.
Yeah.
It's not fly.
Carrying money.
Yeah, it's not
count
fly,
money.
Though.
I mean, you know, you
keep it not digital.
Fly. Yeah,
keep it electric.
Fly.
Yeah, you get bored with counting it. You know, like, oh, man.
You missed the count. There's no way you could do that like this. There's no way you could do that to the T. There's no way. There's no way. You get so tired, you cram, you start talking, you lose count, it fucks up.
I had three girls with money machines to count my money.
It had to be with the machines.
Because it got so bad, man. I mean, I remember I was counting the money by hand, and like, oh, my goodness. And finally, the guy told me about a money counter. What? They got money counters?
No way.
That's how green I was, man.
Listen,
I didn't even know they had money counters.
Sometimes it's just so much money, especially, you know, so much fucking money, like, we don't even count it. Just pack it up. Don't count it.
Who cares?
Just packs it up.
Who cares if you're a couple of thousand short?
Yeah, just pack it up.
Crazy.
But you can't hide it. It gets to be so much money, you put it in a fucking closet. You got to make sure now that you got a hole in the closet that you get a ladder to put the money in, because if you open the door, the money will crush you. You know, these guys, they're young kids. They're kid teenagers.
It's nuts, dude.
But this is when the dirty part comes of the game, when your friends start killing one another. You know, guys we grew up with all the time. And then you say, you killed who? You heard somebody died and you're mad. And then you find out your friend killed them. We're all friends. We all grew up and went to school together. We stuck one in his spot. We went in his spot. And they say, I grew up when I fought for him before. I shot out with him before. And he ain't going to put me in on this. And that's how their minds think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the jealousy.
You owe me, man. I saved your life before. You ain't going to put me in on this? Mm. Crazy shit, man. You owe me, man. I'm the one that started doing all this shit. Y'all niggas know this because y'all did this because I'm the only one that started this. Y'all should owe me for this. It's crazy. The crazy mentalities.
Yeah, you owe them for life. You know,
for real.
You can never pay that debt.
Never.
So I tried to stay away from them kind of guys, though, Mike.
Yeah. In Brownsville, Brooklyn, that's all they are. The gangs, the tough guys.
Yeah.
They're not satisfied until they're dead.
I try to dodge them like a bad habit, you know.
Rick, what
let somebody else kill him. I don't want to do
it. He's always a nice guy, always a gentleman.
No, hey, I don't want to be one killing.
No one has a bad thing to say about him. Like, he stole my money, he did bad stuff to me, he set me up. He's always a gentleman.
Yeah.
And I heard that you were very philanthropic during your time.
What is that?
Give money away.
Giving
nigga.
Money away.
I share it. I mean, you know, some people call it paying, you know, but I call it being a philanthropist, helping the community.
Yeah.
You know, people would come up and say, oh, you know, so-and-so, my son is in jail and he don't have no money. And here, my rent is due. My car got repoed. I mean, you know, this is part of being who we supposed to be. You mm-hmm. know, I believe that we're here on the planet to help other people.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about
Absolutely.
It.
You know, I don't think that we're here to...
And worship. We're here to worship. We're born to worship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before there was anything, the idiots, the first man worshiped something. The first idiot, he couldn't read and write it, had bones, he couldn't walk. He worshiped something.
Yeah, so if we're not helping other people, you know, then you should shoot yourself. Just go out behind the house, you know what I'm saying?
I don't disagree, man. I think being of service is the highest act.
And when you can help somebody, man, just the joy that you feel when you're able to give somebody a hand up, you know. And if you ever need a hand up, the feeling that you get, you know, it's a total different feeling when you got, like, man, I need a hand.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's kind of like it makes you feel degraded, like you're not vibrant. And that's why so many young black males are committing crimes, because they don't want that feeling. You know, they don't want a handout feeling. They want to stand on their own feet. And right now, the way that the system is set up and the way that we've been taught and programmed is not conducive to that. You know, it's kind of the opposite direction.
What do we do with homeless people?
We got to help them.
How do we do that?
Well, first, you know, Mike, you know, you can't help nobody until you got yourself straight, you know. And
say I'm straight. How do we help homeless people? I'm curious about this.
Well, me myself. Say, for instance, if I was rich, you know, like when I become a billionaire in the next couple of years.
Say you got $1 trillion.
Well, I would just build a big apartment complex. You know, give all of them a place to stay. We definitely would have to set rules and regulations. You know, most of the homeless people got mental problems. So we would have to have psychiatrists. We'd have to have doctors. We'd probably have to have security guards as well, because some of them have to be handled. You know, some of them are just not in their right minds. You know, some of them are sick people, and they should be treated as such, not as.
So they say it should be a mental hospital on the
On the
property?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it should be a mental hospital. We definitely should have mental hospitals that treat people with mental illness a special way. You know, if my mom had a mental problem, I would want her treated a certain way. Well, if I was running it, I would treat everybody with a mental illness the way I would treat my mama. You know, right now I got a friend who's taking care of his mom. She got old timers. She'll run off or whatever. And he treats her a certain way. You know, he treats her like that's his mom. And I believe that everybody should be treated with that same.
So how do we police them being abused and being raped and having babies from these weirdos that are supposed to be taking care of them, like the AIDS and stuff.
I mean, it's not easy. It's not going to be an easy task, but it's something that has to be done. You know, we have to do something about our homeless problem. Otherwise, it's going to overtake everybody. You know, right now we got people living under bridges everywhere in L.A., you know, everywhere you look. And not just L.A., you know, I get to travel the country and speak, and I see the same type of situation all over the country. And we just have to do something about it. And I believe that, and even here in California, you know, the taxpayers did pass a bill where everybody agreed to take more out of their taxes to do something about the homeless. But now our politicians is not.
No, they need to be programs, not giving. They don't know what to do with money. You can't Absolutely. Give them money. You need to give them programs that can educate them, that could program them to take care of themselves or to go to some particular kind of venue that can take care of them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. We need psychiatrists that have their best interests at heart. Matter of fact, I just went and spoke at a home the other day for some women who had mental problems. You know, they supposed to be in jail, but they weren't competent to stand trial. So what they're doing now is they're putting them in these little houses, and they have about 20 girls living there. And I went and spoke to them, and what I told them is that if you don't fight your sickness and you allow your sickness to take over, then you're being a victim. But if you fight your sickness to come out of it, to be a better person, to stop yourself from doing whatever crime you did to get yourself in this position, then you become a winner as soon as you start to do that. But when I become a billionaire, I'm going to do something about it. You know, I'm not going to be one of these billionaires who they get the money and they put it in the bank and they get to ride around and tell everybody, oh, look how rich I am. Look what kind of car I got. You know, look how many girlfriends I got. And
Mike wants to build something for homeless people.
No, Mike is right. Yeah. We should build something for homeless people.
Absolutely.
We should build something to set a standard that the rest of the world would marvel at and say, wow.
Absolutely.
They did that for their sick and they're ill.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the American way, you know. That's the way that I was always taught America should be. Not that it's always been like that, because we know that it hasn't.
No, America's about competition and about image. Competitiveness and image.
Yeah. And we got to change that, you know. We have to come in here and set a new tone. You know, we can't let this environment dictate to us who we are and who we're going to become. You know, right now with all of the hate crimes and people walking in churches shooting people and all that is a reflection of what this country has become.
Yeah.
You know, and if we don't correct it, it's only going to get worse. I mean, we're seeing people go in and shoot innocent kids. I mean, unheard of, you know.
It's crazy.
10 or 15 years ago, you know, you never would have thought that nobody would go into a school. Now, we know school kids shoot each other, you know, gangs and stuff like that. But I'm saying, like, a guy just goes into the school and just randomly starts shooting innocent people that they never saw before, never had an argument with.
That's only in America. You know, other parts of the world that's been going on for years. You know what I mean? Because most parts of the world has always been more aggressive than the American part. When you had the guys like the Jackal, and you had the Bottom Line Half Gang, those guys from the 60s, all those terrorist European gangs and stuff, they really did a number in the 60s and 70s and stuff, and early 80s. They're the ones that created Yasser Arafat and all those guys and stuff.
But those guys were fighting over property, though.
Huh?
They were fighting over property. They fighting over land.
No, they were fighting over cause, but it trickled down. All that stuff trickles down to us.
Right.
It all trickles down to the Empire State Buildings, the two trade centers getting crushed with the airplane. It all trickles down to that. It all trickles down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But these lunatics going in churches and schools and just like shooting everybody they never seen before, never had an argument with them. I mean,
yeah,
that's strange.
There's just so many mentally ill people, you know. We don't do anything.
But they feed their mental illness the wrong stuff. You know,
exactly.
When you start feeding the mental illness guns and violence
and pills.
I don't think they mentally. Yeah, I think this is something they want to do. I think this is a belief system, and this is what they believe in. And I think they're doing it for a cause, whatever cause it may be—a racial cause, a spiritual cause, a religious cause. Whatever, that's their cause. I don't believe they're mentally ill.
You're right, and some of them do have that religious issue, and I don't know. I mean, you know
how complicated life is to deal with? That's why people kill themselves. I can't deal with this shit. Throw it out. No. They don't say, hold on, so let me count to 10. Take some deep breaths and let me go on again. I just want it over with. I can't take the fucking pain.
Crazy.
And it's only an illusion. The pain's an illusion.
This will be a little bit of a shift, but when I was a freshman in high school, I had a teacher who grew up in L.A., and he said that these trucks or containers or trains used to show up open, full of drugs and guns.
I heard those stories.
And I was like, no fucking way. And then watching your movie last night, I was like, they were doing that. That was happening.
Well, my guys were bringing the drugs in on military planes.
Right, right. That was an operation.
The operation.
I mean, No, but this seemed to me like they were open for anyone to come in or someone to come in and take the guns and the drugs. People from the community. I don't know.
I heard those stories that they left trains over there for weeks and stuff with full of guns, and I never saw it and never participated in the gun buy, but I've heard those stories.
Mm.
Like I said, my guys were they had the military back, and so they flew their drugs in.
That was crazy.
Life is so, you know what I mean?
Well, then it's really interesting to me, too, when they would show the drug bus on TV. Like, there was one big drug bus in the movie they talk about, and they do a big press conference, and they talk about these drugs.
And they show all the drugs and the money.
They show all the drugs, and they talk about how great they did, like, making this bust. And it's like, why is there this show when they're involved in the circulation of them? And no one, I don't think anyone would really care whether the bust was made or not if they didn't know what the drugs were. Does that make sense?
A little bit. Well, it's a lot to that you just said. First of all, they want to make the bus because the bus is tied to their paycheck. Mm. The more drugs they find, the more people they arrest, the bigger the paycheck, the bigger the budget. Now, we can write in and say, okay, we found 10,000 kilos of cocaine. Well, the other precinct only found 1,000 kilos of cocaine, so our budget should be bigger than theirs because we're fighting a bigger problem.
Yeah.
So they're... Bottom line depends on how big the bus is and when they get it. So they just automatically want to increase these numbers.
Yeah, they want everybody to see how awesome they are.
So you dig that you were like a really big kingpin, right?
Right. What I learned from the drug business and how I got so wealthy in the drug business is once I had figured it out for myself. I figured out how I could take $125 and I could turn it into $1 million. I figured that out. So once I figured it out, I just had to start teaching my friends. And I went from one after another one and teach them. Okay, this is how you do it. Don't get high. If you get high, you ain't going to get no money. You got to make a choice. Do you want to be a addict or do you want to be a millionaire? And, you know, most of the time they'll say, oh, I want to be a millionaire, but I'm still going to get high. And you know it's more complicated. People have done it. I've seen them get high and still get their money, but it's a harder process. It's rare.
Really messy.
Because you know you want to spend all your time getting high. Like, hold on, I'm gonna take care of that when I finish this one here.
You know, when like in my world, like with my friends and stuff, like we'll see each other on the weekend, we be partying our ass off. But from Monday to Friday, there's killing, there's setting up, there's deals, there's a hell of a life. And sometimes, you know, you see the crew, and then sometimes the crew that you're used to seeing, they disappear. Some of them are missing. You know?
Crazy.
Mike, I know you took care of a lot of your guys, though.
All the time.
You saved them.
Yeah, all the time.
So they didn't have to go in the streets no more.
All the time.
Yeah, so.
But some guys, they just can't stop. It's not the money.
They want to go back to the streets.
No, it's not the money.
Like Suge Knight, he didn't want to.
Listen, it's that glory, too, to have people afraid of you and fearing you. That's the drug. They love that. Could get anybody the house to buy.
We do see them every now and then. Yeah. That'll do like what Suge did. Get everything that you want, and then still want to be in the streets. But that's insane.
Stay away from the streets. Streets undefeated.
That's that mental hospital.
Yeah.
You need to be in a mental hospital when you think like that.
Streets undefeated. You can't win in the streets.
And the streets don't forgive.
No, not a little bit.
Yeah. Once you get out there, it's rough. But I believe in. That's my goal right now is to become successful first for myself and my family, and then so that I can show other people how to do it. You know how to get out of poverty.
So what are you going about doing? How do you make income? What do you do for income now?
Right now?
Yes.
Marijuana.
Yes.
I just started my vape pen company. I sell cars.
This is a vape, too. It looks like a blunt.
I thought that was a blunt, man.
You get all kinds of stuff.
I sell cars.
Yeah, your partner was telling me that. What kind of cars you sell?
I can get anything you want.
Oh, shit.
Any car you want, you can holler at me. I'll get it for you. I'm going to get you a deal, too.
I love that,
man. I got my T-shirt line that I'm doing. I got two books out now. I got my first book, my autobiography, and then I got my new book that just came out, The 21 Keys of Success. And that book came about, it's about my first 6 months out of prison.
Wow.
You know, how I got out of prison. And I was homeless for a while. When I first got out, I was homeless, believe it or not. Nobody would help me out. You know, I had all the intentions and everything, but... when you're not doing good, nobody's going to reach back. You know, I got out of prison with $200 and I had to take that and go to work with it. And now I got a nice crew, about 20 people that I'm working with, maybe 30. And we're going to build this thing into a $1 billion industry. Starting.
You know, Americans are taught that poverty is contagious. Americans, we're taught to believe that poverty is contagious. We stay away from anything that's poverty-orientated.
Mm. It's ruthless.
Yeah, it's really cold-blooded.
Yeah, poverty is ruthless.
Yeah.
You ain't got to do nothing.
I mean, it's horrible, you know, with the homeless situation in L.A., because so many people just want to isolate them and send them away and not help them.
Evan? The gap between the rich and the poor getting so big, it's something bad is getting ready to happen. Something real bad is getting ready. Now our children,
it is getting greater.
Now our children got to worry. If we don't make this better and take care of this problem, our kids are going to be in trouble. Yeah. They'll be in a lot of trouble.
The world going to be in trouble.
Yeah. The world is going to be our kids. Those are the youth.
Right. You're right.
Trouble. The world is definitely in trouble if we don't.
So it's our goal. I mean, that should be
something with this gap, this financial gap.
That should be our mission as people right now, to figure out how to solve the problems that we have. And that's what I want to do. I mean, I would love to be like, you know, when it all is said and done, they'd be like, man, Rick came up with the solution, man.
I love that.
He's the plug.
That's dope, man. The new plug.
The new plug. I love that. The plug again, you know.
Yeah. I got to ask you about, what's his name? William Roberts? Is that his name? The fake Rick Ross?
I know that guy.
About that guy, man? Why is he a bad guy? Tell me, man. He seems like a sweet guy. What's wrong with him?
Well, his response to you, to really turn me off. I'm not a fan anymore.
What did he say to
you? He called me a rat.
Oh,
didn't acknowledge you.
Say what?
He said I'm a rat. I'm down on my luck. And
well, he shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Not using my name. I mean, like, I'm using your car. I took your car, Mike, and I drove it to the thing, and everybody recognized me, and I got a deal. But I'm going to keep the car, and I ain't going to get you nothing for it.
Yeah.
You know, us as black people, we have to know how to learn how to love each other. Then we learned how to love each other collectively. You know what I mean? As a group of people, we haven't learned how to love each other yet.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't really have much bad to say about him. You know, I done told jokes about him. And I never did.
I don't dislike the guy. No, you were very honorable, man.
I don't dislike the guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's a clown, though.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, he's revealed himself to be that. Because he could have been really cool about it and been really respectful. And I think he could have been
so much. You know, I felt that me and him together could have did some powerful things.
Sure.
You still can.
Why not?
You still can. Listen.
It was interesting.
Sometimes we got to take ourselves out of the equation, our feelings out of the equation. You know what I mean? Forget what anybody would think. If this is a good thing, we can work together. It's a possibility we can work together. Forget what people would say about what we say. You know, the purpose.
I don't think he'll work with me, though.
Yeah, I mean, I gave offers to... There's free will, man.
I done gave offers and I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, if he came today and said he wanted to, I'd be like, okay,
Where's it at now?
I'd be like, ah.
What's the situation?
I got to work with somebody else that's retarded.
What's the situation right now?
You can teach people and show people.
Some people you just...
I was retarded. I was one of those guys before.
You was retarded before?
Oh, man. Such an asshole.
I was, too.
Oh, man. We've all been there.
I was, too, but I came out of my retardism.
But when you come out and you find out how retarded, you feel like killing yourself. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was retarded, too.
I said that.
I was retarded, too.
Yeah. So where's that situation?
But I came out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, his numbers is down on the charts. And I don't nobody listen
still
to his
use
music
the name
no more.
Rick Ross?
Yeah, he's gonna lose that Rick Ross.
I think he does. I mean, you
still
know,
use it.
Universal want him to use the name. They won't let him change it.
Yeah, they'll put money on it.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know, right now, man, I'd be so tied up in myself and what I'm doing that it's hard for me to like recognize, you know.
Yeah.
Like somebody was telling me about some boots was in my house one day that somebody had on. I was like, man, I don't be looking at no boots, man. Come on. I'm bigger than that, you know. So
that's the mindset.
I really just don't pay attention to him, you know.
Yeah,
I know
of course
that I don't have to hear his music on the radio anymore. You know, they stopped playing his music on the radio. So that's
took
a sign.
A hit for that, man. He took a hit.
Oh no, they
universe.
Kept playing. No, they kept playing him after he lost the lawsuit. I mean, after he won the lawsuit, he's still playing. But I mean, you know.
Well, karmically.
With rap music though, it has a time cycle. You know, like you hot today, you might be hot 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden, you're gone.
Yeah.
You know, not to be heard of again. You know, they go and they repo your house and get all the cars and like, man, we just loaned you that. That wasn't none of yours. You was faking. And this wasn't real.
It's a trip.
But what I really don't like about it is the image that it portrays to our kids. Hmm. You know, our kids start to believe that these guys made all of this money selling drugs and that they was killers. And then our kids go out and practice the things that these guys rapped about, which was totally fake. Hmm. And that's one of my biggest gripes with the whole industry, and that he took a real name that's going down in history, you know, that's in law books, and use that name to portray a lie. Mm-hmm. And I really have an issue with that. You know, I have an issue that the kids don't know his real name. When I go to schools and speak sometime, the kids ask me, why did I change my name to Rick Ross? And I said, well, you're going to have to talk to my mama. That's on my birth certificate. That's not a rap moniker. You know, I'm the real deal. I really did.
The real Rick Ross.
I went to prison. I had federal agents, you know, surrounding my place. You
kicking
know,
the door down, huh?
Yeah, kick the door down.
Fuck,
this ain't no rap video, you know. Yeah. My documentary is real life experiences.
Yeah.
So our kids don't really understand how to decipher real from fake, because everybody is allowing them to do. Like it's been times I went to schools to speak to the kids and I wasn't allowed in. They didn't allow me to speak. But then I hang around at the football game and the basketball game, and they playing these rap records from this guy who's talking about he's a drug dealer.
Interesting. Why didn't they let you in?
They are afraid of a real drug dealer.
Mm. They think you're going to be telling the kids to, like, go sell drugs, kids.
Right. But now, if you're a fake drug dealer who brags about selling drugs,
yeah, then, that's cool.
Then you okay, because you didn't really do it.
It's really interesting, man.
You know, the times have changed now. See, a lot of those guys, Evan, like in our community, a lot of those guys, and you know it, a lot of those guys are not here no more. A lot of guys from the first, like the first rave of rappers and stuff, when they were playing tough guys, other guys that were really tough guys say, oh, yeah, you are a tough guy? Oh, you really are a bad motherfucker? You killing niggas like that? You got bitches all like that and dope and money and jewelry? And that was their target. Because then they got those ego guys out there. Oh, yeah, you badass motherfucker. You got jewelry? Where is it at?
Yeah.
And that's
well, those
the
guys on the street, they don't have nothing.
Yeah, but that wave of people are not around anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They put big laws and now they got the hip-hop police, so most of the rappers and stuff has protection.
They better.
You know? Because these guys were vicious. Those guys were vicious.
And then they go steal the gold and they find out it was fake.
Yeah. True that.
For real.
They wearing fake jewelry. Like, man, I did all this. I took a penitentiary chance. And then they want to kill him.
It's insane, man.
Craig, yeah. That's the world is out here. All the music is used to control the youth. It's been that way forever.
Mm. Yeah, but we got to start doing some music that is uplifting, educational, and that will send us forward. Because if we continue down,
you get one of those songs out of 1,000.
There's a few of those.
You get a couple of them out of 1,000.
Well, the record label's not going to promote them.
Yeah, out of 1,000, you get a good one.
The record labels are not going to promote them. They're not. You know, they don't care. They want the bottom line for their investors. But it's going to be up to people like us to spread the word about how this system. I mean, even like with my movie should have been out.
Yeah,
my movie should have been out. But when I'm talking to these guys from Hollywood, they try to convince me how much people are not going to watch my movie. You know, and I'm like, you can't convince me that because I live in the streets. I live with the people.
Because they want you to say, hey, take this $100,000 for your life fucking story, all right? And we want to buy your rights, and they take this $100,000, and that's cool. And we're going to sell your rights for $100 million.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you'll be happy.
Yeah, be happy, nigga.
It's fucked, man.
So, I just feel that they have to deal with me different because my morals is no longer tied to money. Because what I found out, if I tie myself to money, I can sell cocaine to my family members or to anybody.
They're going to give you your money. Well, as soon as you keep staying on these iPods and stuff, they're going to give you your money. Put it out there. They're going to give you your money.
Yeah,
no, serious. Absolutely. Put them on blast. They're going to give you your money.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to stay on their head. I've been on their head. I told them they better pay me my money if they want me to quit.
Those people don't like bad reputation. Their whole life is on a fake reputation. They don't want to have no damaged reputation.
Yeah. But that's pretty much the way I've been handling it. And just going around trying to show people how they can have the same type of success that I'm having right now.
So you're a beautiful guy, man. You're really awesome. We're glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here, man.
Great to have you here, brother.
When they told me, they was like, man, Mike, Mike want to interview you, man. I said, man, Mike Tyson, really? Man.
I told your son I was going to interview you.
Yeah.
Your name came up early on. When we first started the show.
Well, that's good. Well, you know, I've been out here working hard, man. I haven't taken a day off in 10 years. You know, every single day I wake up with the same mindset that I have to make the world a better place, you know. And if I don't, who else will do it?
Man. I love that. Keep doing it, brother.
I'm going to do that.
What do you think about this world we live in? What do you think you go after we finish in this world?
Well, I think we're done.
Now, what do you think? You think it's over? It's a blackout?
Is that? That's it.
It's dark. Yeah. It's all dark and shit is over. That energy that you got right now.
Well, you know, atoms never die.
Yeah. I'm trying to ask you, what's all that energy that you got? I'm not talking about your physical.
The energy gonna continue to live. You know, that energy that we have today, it never dies. You know.
How do you know it never died?
Well, scientists say that atoms live forever. You can't kill atoms. So we all have atoms in us, and we made an atom, so we'll continue to live.
I like that logic.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
It's good.
But do I believe that there's a heaven? You know, that I'm going, no, I don't believe. I don't believe.
So do you believe this when it opens just a black bang? There's no more. Do you believe that your energy's going to go up and you can look yourself down and see yourself
no.
die, your body?
No, no, I don't believe that.
All right, cool.
I don't.
That's one of Mike's tests.
I believe that my legacy is going to dictate how things should be going for years. You know, that's what I want. I want my legacy to live on. Like, Rick showed us this.
Yeah.
And this is how you should do. You know, one of my coaches, you know, my tennis coaches, he used to tell me that you live until the last person speak your name. Mm. And once that's over, then that's it. You're done.
Who's the last
that's
person?
Intense.
Who knows who the last person is? Maybe it's your great-great-great-great-grandkid.
Right.
You know, maybe it's some person who picks up your book and read it and was like, wow, I got a lot out of that from that old guy, you know, that's who lived back in 1988.
That's an interesting perspective, too, man.
Yeah. So.
Imagine all this we experience right now. It's an illusion. It never existed.
Well, it is illusion, but it's in my mind. You know, I believe that we create our own dreams, and all of you guys are just in my dream. And
that's right.
How did we get here without you inviting us?
Plan your part. I invited you. I wanted you in. I wanted you to be here.
Yeah.
Man.
That's deep.
Without
spot,
even meeting us, how you wanted us to be here?
Hey, believe it or not, man. One day you got to read the article they did on me in LA Magazine, right?
What they say?
Absolutely.
They was writing my obituary.
Oh, wow.
They thought I died.
Wow.
Yes. This guy wrote. He was like, I'm here. I rode out to Lompoc Penitentiary with gun tires, meat razor wire, and I'm going to see Freeway Ricky Ross. And this is the last time I'll be writing about him. He's gone. He's through. The world is tired of his dreaming. They don't want him to dream no more. And then when he came out there, I was telling him about
it. I heard Maxine Waters talk about you a lot. Use your name a lot.
Maxine, she loves me. I love Maxine, too.
She's awesome,
that's
chick.
My lady. not like that if her husband here.
Her husband, ex-football player.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah,
he used to play tennis,
right?
too.
Yeah.
Ricky?
He used to come down there. I used to beat up on him.
Ricky Waters?
Oh, no.
No, Sydney.
Sydney
Waters. Mm. Yeah, but in that article, I pretty much was laying out to this guy what I'm doing right now. That I was going to be in this position, you know,
spoke it into existence, man.
That's how we do, though.
Yeah.
It's like selling drugs, right? Like, look, I spoke into existence being a drug dealer. Because I go watch this movie. Mike, I know you've seen Superfly.
Curtis Mayfield, dude.
Superfly guy, right?
But listen, Curtis, if you lived in a community like mine, that's what was based on, you know,
that
it was sold
superstar.
To that community. It was sold to that community.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they sold it to me.
Yeah.
So now, look, I go see this movie. Now, I still love Arthur Ashe, right? But I just saw a black man stare down like 10 white cops. Yeah. He break them down like, oh, you saw the movie, Mike.
Yes.
You can do my dirty laundry if you want to. That ain't gonna hurt. That ain't gonna help you.
But listen, man. When I saw the Mac and what was the other one, Willie Dynamite, that really turned me out. Remember Willie Dynamite? Oh, that was good stuff.
I saw all those.
That was good stuff.
But Superfly was mine. I had, when I got my first DVR, on two movies, Superfly, Scarface. Them was my first two movies, man. We watched them over and over every day. I'm sitting in the crack house selling crack out the door watching Superfly like, oh, get him, man, get him. and that's what I became. I became Superfly.
Wow. Those are the guys in our neighborhood, you know.
It's crazy, man.
And it's crazy how when I was in prison, I started to think about that, right? Because look at this here. Then I went back into my life, and then, like, I used to ask my girl, hey, you going to run for me when I go to jail? I ain't never been in a police car. But I'm asking her, you going to run for me when I go to jail? I ain't going to tell you what she said. I'm going to leave that out. So when I'm in jail now, and I'm looking back at my life, and I'm starting to learn, and I'm studying, and I'm becoming conscious, and I'm like, damn, Rick, you know you thought your way in jail. I said, nah, it can't work like that. Won't you think your way out of jail then? If you think you thought your way in, think your way out. Bop. That's how I got out of prison. Because I started to think my way out like I thought my way in. Just like right now, I'm going to think of a way to solve the problems that we have in our community with the homeless, with the LICA jobs, with gang activity, with all of the things that are ill in our community, and some of them that I know I help fuel from selling drugs. Now it's my goal to stop those things, and that's my mission right now. That's what I'm on. I ain't on the money, but I know I got to get the money.
We got to change the perception we have of ourselves and one another.
But we need somebody to show us that we should change. Because, see, how can you change unless you know that you should change?
Well, you should know you shouldn't talk to people in certain ways. You should
but
know.
But, Mike, how do you know that if nobody ever teaches you? If nobody never shows you.
I say common fucking sense.
No, it ain't common.
Man, I want common
sense. It ain't common. No, Mike, it ain't common.
Listen, when
Mike.
I get bullied, like this friend, when I was a little kid and I got bullied, and somebody, you're stupid motherfucker, what you doing here, nigga? I would say, wow, I would like to, I wish this motherfucker didn't talk to me like that. Once he did that, I know he could do anything. Kick me, rape me, slice my throat. He could do anything to me. You know what I mean? That's the first thing. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't want nobody to feel the way I felt the way he, because he talked to me that way.
Right. I agree. But what I'm saying is that he didn't know that he shouldn't talk to you like that. He didn't know that he was.
You think he talked to his mother like that?
He probably didn't, but he may have. Some of them talk to their mamas
right.
like
that. He might be being right. spoken but, to like that as
but,
well.
But, Mike, what I'm saying, listen what I'm saying. Listen what I'm trying to say. I don't even know if I got it right. I could be totally off. off
Give
off.
Me a go at it.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm gonna try to explain it. How can you know if nobody ever taught you when all the people that taught you that this is the way you should be acting? You've been taught to act like this. This is not you. But once you are taught to act like that, you believe that this is the way you should be.
Yeah.
Well, my mother taught me yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, ma'am, no, sir, and I always got my ass kicked.
But you were different, though. Mm-hmm. I'm saying the normal teaching right now, the teaching on the street, yeah. Be a gangster, be tough, beat the plug, steal, rob, lie, fake.
Do whatever you got to do.
To make it.
Yeah.
And even if you ain't made it, fake it. You know, so this becomes your reality. This becomes our reality of not having, but fake like you have. You know, spend your last dollar to look good, even though shit is fucked up. You know, you ain't took a shower, but you got on new clothes.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the perception that this world has been teaching people, man. So I don't, and yeah, the person who did that to you, he holds some responsibility. But I look at it like this: here, they try to front me down, right, and make me feel bad about myself. And they say, "Well, look how many people that you messed up when you sold drugs." I said, "Yeah, I'm a bad guy." But then what about the guy who taught me how to sell drugs? Does he hold some responsibility for teaching me what I learned from him? And then we got to go back to the guy that taught him. I mean, you know, you could just keep going.
And the people who decided to buy the drugs.
And drugs
from you.
Don't have no end.
Oh, just the people who bought the drugs got some responsibility too?
Absolutely.
Because if they didn't buy it, the guy who taught me, who probably wouldn't have even been selling it because...
And all the people who taught them that they needed to buy these drugs to feel a certain way that made them feel happy.
There we go. So you just keep going. I mean, the thing could go on
and that's why I think your point about it starts with yourself is so powerful, man. Because if you can teach everybody to take care of yourself first and get right with that, then you can start to make change in the world and people around you.
Amen. I agree.
I think drugs are meant to be in the society. They've been inside since the beginning
of
life.
Well, they'll always be here. They'll always be around.
I don't think it has no end.
Humans are not the only animal that gets high.
Yeah.
No.
You know, jaguars will eat the vine that holds the DMT.
Yeah.
And they'll get super high.
Elephants eat sour oranges.
Yeah. Yeah, man. They do all kinds of shit.
They get buzzed too, huh?
Yeah, they get a buzz. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't want to deal with what's life, going on around them, so they just want to mellow out. Man, yeah. I'm just going to mellow out, man. I'm going to hit a joint. I ain't fuck with nobody. You know what I'm saying? I ain't bothering nobody. I just want to be here and chill out.
That's right, man. I mean, you know, it's all about how you use them, you know, how you use them.
And if we want to fight the war on drugs, I believe it starts with education.
Yeah.
You know, we already know there's been reports to show that there's money is better spent on prevention than intervention, you know, incarceration and all that. That shit don't work. Yeah. It don't stop nobody. Bullshit. I knew guys were in jail making plans with the Colombians, you know, they on the yard like, oh, man, we finishing shiploads over
and
here.
And it doesn't even do anything.
Nothing.
So putting them in jail, they're still doing business.
Bigger.
Yeah.
Sometimes bigger. You make them bigger.
Listen, when you do time in prison, no one gets you by? Your mind being stimulated. Sometimes you just, oh, shit. But when your mind's stimulated, you know shit's going on. We're making money. We're doing it. We're doing this. Shit's on the phone. I'm going to call them. It's going to be a fuck scene. We're going to listen to that. And your mind needs to be stimulated. You know, I'm serious. Yeah. My mind was stimulated in prison. It was like I was like at a camp. My, you know, it's a ball. It was just stimulated constantly.
You just kept yourself busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to. You got to. I stay busy, too. I learned how to read there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I read over 300 books.
Isn't it wonderful learning how to read? That's another world.
Oh, my God.
That's another world.
I went to China. I was in prison in China, right? I'm in China.
Me, too. I read the life story of Mao Zedong. I was in fucking China. I knew the life, the history of the fucking country. Man. When I go there, I talk about everything I learned from the book. And say, how do you know so much about China? Because I was in prison, I read the book in China.
So, like, in that article that I was telling you about, the guy talk about when I tell him that I might be more freer when I was in prison than I'd ever been before in my life. Because now I had learned how to visualize, how to fantasize, how to open up my mind. When before, my mind was trapped in South Central Los Angeles, which was penitentiary bound. Like, I'm going to the penitentiary, you know.
But
like,
when I was in the penitentiary, I got all the news first. People, I would call people, and they'd say, yo, and such and such got killed, or this and that. And I would call such and such. I'd say, yo, what happened? So how did he get killed? And they said, he got killed. I didn't know he got killed. You know, I would get all the news first. And they'd say, what happened to this person? What happened to that person? I heard this happened. How do you find this shit out, Mike? You're in prison. And the word just comes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It circulates around that prison.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, I mean, I don't know. Life is crazy, you know, and I'm just going to keep being crazy in it and keep letting my mind run free, you know. I don't want my mind to be incarcerated, you know. Just like the other day. I went to jail the other day, like a week ago. I was
Tell
in jail.
Me about that. How did that work out?
Oh, man, me and my son, that you met, we sitting
Tell
in the car
that.
And we're just sitting there, and the cops pull in the driveway, and they got their lights out. So, you know, you automatically know something is up. Cops at nighttime, they cops riding with their lights out. Look out. So they walk up to the car, and they ask me for my ID. I hand them my ID and everything, and I'm like, oh, well, this is going to be nice and quick. And then they said, you on parole? And I said, nope. And then the other cop had walked over to my son and asked him, was he on parole? And then my son said, yeah. He said, oh, this one over here is on parole. And the one next to me said, oh, you lied to me. And I said, no, I didn't lie to you. I told you I wasn't on parole, and I'm not. Get out of the car. So they snatched us out the car, and then he asked me to sit on the ground. I said, no, I'm not sitting on the ground. Oh, you're going to sit on the ground. No, I'm not going to sit on the ground. You might throw me on the ground, but I'm not going to sit on the ground. It's a difference. So he started trying to handcuff me, and you ain't finna handcuff me. Handcuff me for what? You know, like, I ain't that shit. And, next thing I know, his partner grabbed me, and they both had me by the arms and took me to the ground and put his knee in my back, roughed me up, and then they took me to jail for obstruction of an investigation. So they gave me a ticket, let me out in about 6 hours. You know, and I was like, come on, man, where the lunch sacks at? Give me a sack. I want a sack. Put me in a cell. I want to take a nap. Because, you know, put me in jail, it don't scare me going to jail. Like, I did 20 years, man. I can do 6 hours on a handstand. Matter of fact, I'm going to do the push-ups the whole 6 hours that I'm here. So, but what it did show me is the state of this society, the way they still look at a black man in this country, that we can be made to sit on the ground or roll over, and I ain't rolling over. You know, I ain't laying down. I ain't sitting down unless I want to sit down. If somebody asks me who I want to sit down for, I might sit down, but I'm not doing none of that. You know, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to be a man now.
Fuck that.
For what I believe in. And if it means going to jail for what I believe in, or whatever the consequences may be for what I believe in, then that's what it is. So that's why I didn't sit on the ground. That's why I went to jail. And if they came and they did it today, they would take me to jail again. And every time they asked me to sit on the ground. So all the cops out there watching, if you ask me to sit on the ground, you got to take me to jail.
Jail sucks.
Yeah.
I used to be in jail all the time. But I think now, fuck, what did I do in my life? Why did I waste so much time in jail?
Yeah.
Glad you guys are out.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of good, man.
Oh, we're going to do more good, man. Yeah. And
a lot more to come, for
Mike,
sure.
Mike, one day we got to go to one of them high schools and talk to the kids, man.
That'd be pretty interesting.
They would love to see you.
You know, I went to a high school. Listen, I went to a fucking high school the other day, and not the other day, 10 years ago. And I went to the classroom, so the principal had this big fucking screen, and so he's showing the kids my fight for the kids, because the kids didn't know who the fuck I was. They said, Mike Tyson's the guy from the movie, The Hangover. They had no idea I was a fucking fighter. And that's the movie. And, the principal was saying, no, he was a fighter. They had no idea I was a fighter. Wow. That was a fighter.
That's
you know what I mean? Time just flies so fast.
One of the greatest.
Well, thank you. Thank you, brother.
The people's champ. Somebody told me that you say the people's champ.
That's right.
The people's champ is more important than the belt. Yeah. Somebody told me you said that.
Yes, I did say that.
He said, you can have the belt, but if you ain't got the people, you ain't got nothing. True. I want the people.
That's for sure.
Keep the belt. Keep the money. Give me the people.
I was just always in the streets with the people. I was just a street person. I just happened to be a champ, and I fought and stuff.
They told me, Mike used to be
in the streets with people.
Somebody told me Mike used to be in South Central L.A. playing catch football with the kids in the middle of the streets.
Because I used to date some girls out there.
They say he would be in the middle of the street, and all of a sudden, like, 10 cars will pull up. Mike, you got to go. You can't be over here playing football.
I used to hang out with the people, though. Compton, we go hang out in the project.
Yeah, they said Mike used to be. I heard this in jail. Awesome, this is stuff they was talking about in jail. Like, man, Mike was on such a street the other day playing touch football in the middle of the street with the kids.
Crazy.
And like 10 cars pulled up, and they jumped out. Hey, Mike, you can't be over here like this, Mike. Come on, let's go.
That's who he is.
Yeah, but I'm never going to be afraid of the people, though, you know? Yeah. Imagine me being afraid of those people. I'd be afraid of myself.
Yeah.
You know?
It's awesome, man. It's an awesome way to be. Should we wrap this thing, Mike?
Are we out of here? What time is it, man?
I don't know. It's like midnight.
Midnight. Get out of here.
Awesome,
We've been going for a while,
Thank
man.
You, Rick.
Thank you, guys.
Where can everybody find you?
Yeah, give us information. You got a million people looking at you.
They can find me on social media at Freeway Ricky. On all the social media, all across the board. Also, I didn't bring no books with me today. Sorry.
Who's going to play you in the movie, man?
Childish Gambino.
Ooh, good choice.
Childish Gambino. He better
great
do it
choice,
if he ain't crazy.
Does he know how to act? He's a good actor. Have you seen him in
the actor.
He's super.
Great talent.
I don't know. I don't know nothing about nobody.
Somebody had put a picture up of me and him on social media, and because I didn't know who he was. I'd heard his song, though, you know, This is America.
Yeah,
I'd
amazing.
Heard that song, but I didn't know the name of the artist. And then when they put the picture up and they told me who it was, and I know my casting director, she's going to have a fit for me saying that. Like, oh, don't be
That's a dope choice, man. Good choice.
Yeah, but that's who I want. The script is almost done. Shout out to my script doctor, Kush. Reginald Hudlin and
they're good. The brothers, right? Hudlin brothers.
Yeah, that's who did it. We're doing it independent.
Yeah,
totally dope. Independent. And then this is. I'm gonna say this, and I'm gonna get ready to go. This is what the movie is supposed to capture: a young man that wants a car and a girl. And I'm gonna leave it at that. Peace, y'all. Hit me up.
One love. Hey, what about that show? That show that's on television.
Freeway.
No, it's another show. What's that show on television?
On Netflix.
Snowfall. That about you? Any of that about you?
That was on FX.
Yeah, they ripped me off.
Yeah, they're trying to steal your story for free, right?
You know
that was these motherfuckers.
Blair was just saying
they just changed the name.
He read the book.
Uh huh.
and how similar the book and the show is. But you know what? Hey, y'all stole it. Peace. Enjoy yourself. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
More creative because I got an open mind.
Hell yeah, brother.
All right, we're out of here now. We need to hear that.
Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
And we're out of here, y'all.
One.